But on the other hand, that Islamic connection was important because the small Turkish courts that settled in the cities at Konya, at Sivas, at Tokat, these are cities that are still important ancient centers, Kayseri, another one. These are all centers on the plateau. Those Turkish rulers, in the end, did respect that Islamic tradition. And by the time you get into the second and third generation of Turkish rulers in Anatolian, in Anatolia, they are beginning to buy the respectability of Islamic high culture. They begin to bring in Persians, some Arabs, but primarily Persians, to staff their administration. They bring in craftsmen from the Islamic world. They also revive or reorganize those ancient trade routes going back to the time when the Assyrians first entered the peninsula and establish a whole network of caravan trades, which ties the plateau to Syria, to Iraq, to Iran, which slowly reorients Asia Minor back into that wider Near East, which is now, by definition, a Muslim culture. And that is a process that goes on in the 13th and the 14th century. It's assisted by several important developments. One is a major silver strike in eastern Anatolia. The Seljuk sultans at Konya were simply the beneficiaries of new mining techniques, which led to a flood of silver so they could issue the first Islamic coinage in Asia Minor. Furthermore, the boom of that trade that went in tandem with this economic boom is well expressed in the building of what are known as caravanserai, which are caravan palaces. Sarai is simply palace in Turkish. And these are really magnificent monuments. They're literally fortified encampments. Some of them have classical monumental elements. It's really applying Roman arch and fortification techniques. And what happens is that the Seljuk sultans crisscross the interior of Asia Minor with these caravan centers a day apart so that caravans coming up from the Near East would have protected places to stay. These were endowed. They were paid usually by assigning Christian agriculturalists who had to support the caravan. And there was food, there was lodging, and caravans could stay. And also there was the very sound rule, I think they have to leave the next day. You don't want them to stay too long. I mean, understanding that guests can overstay their welcome. But nonetheless, it indicated that the caravans from the Islamic world were under the protection of the sultans of Konya and that the trade connections mattered. Foremost, sultans of Konya launched the first major buildings in Asia Minor, oh, really since probably the 11th century. At the beginning of the 13th century, we have some mosques being constructed in Konya. But the mosques are rather unimpressive. The really important buildings were the madrasas. These are religious schools. They are something of the Muslim equivalent of a monastery. They usually have these two magnificent towers with porcelain tile decoration. They're minarets, and the minarets are there for the call to prayer of the faithful in the Islamic tradition. And madrasas are far more numerous. In the 13th century, there's well over 100 examples, far many more than the mosques. And the madrasas become the way of rewriting architecturally the landscape of cities in Asia Minor. In the 14th and 15th century, they increase in number. And steadily, the minaret replaces the Christian dome church and the bell tower as the skyline of Asia Minor. And again, by 1350, this process is well along the way to completion. And the madrasas are also the centers of Muslim religious training. There are a whole religious colleges. They're of the Sunni, that is the Orthodox Islamic tradition. They provide the qadis, the judges who interpret Muslim law. Many of the religious figures in the madrasas are not actually Turks. Again, they come from Persia. They come from the Arabic-speaking lands. But nonetheless, in the course of the 13th and 14th century, these Turkish rulers really do want to gain that respectability. They want to show themselves as legitimate Muslim rulers. And so they're sponsoring not only the development of religious thought, but also of religious architecture. And it's in this context, that a remarkable figure emerges. And his name, I mentioned him earlier, his name is Jalaluddin Rumi'i. He's a native of Balkh in Central Asia, born around, I don't know, 1205, 1206. The date is disputed. He dies in 1273. And he was a not only a religious thinker, but an inspired poet. He was of Persian origin. He wrote his poems in Persian, and he's typical of the many immigrants, theologians, craftsmen, and other Muslim immigrants who came to the courts in Asia Minor of the Turkish sultans and emirs.